In editing, you're an astronaut. You know, you got everything in your hands. You can create anything that you basically want to, but it's a solitary thing. And I think when you work, when you direct, you truly do rely on a lot of people. And it's a humbling experience and a beautiful thing.
Hello, and welcome to the Now Then podcast. In this episode, we speak to film editor and director Sarah Klein. He's known for editing films such as Almost Famous, The Thin Red Line, and The Bourne Identity, just to name a few. He's also directed the feature film After the Fall. In our conversation, we discussed how he broke into the industry, his approach to storytelling, managing egos, and the importance of opening yourself up to the creative process. This episode is sponsored by The Gate Plus and produced by Jack Kirkwood, hosted by directors Craig Bingham and Ozzy Pulling. Hope you enjoy.
So we were chatting about just like this great opportunity of what to talk to you about. And the one thing that we love talking about on the podcast is, well, firstly, it's kind of like we always like talking about the journey into the industry and just tapping into basically how each individual approaches their work.
Yeah.
But what was your kind of way into the industry, Sarah? How did it all start for you?
It really just started by like, in high school, I went to high school in like the 80s in New York City, just finding out it was like the birth of independent cinema. And TV was pretty crappy, right? It was like Dallas and Dynasty and stuff like that. And I didn't really relate to any of it. And then started watching a couple of these indie films like Repo Man and The Pope of Greenwich Village, which wasn't really an indie film. And just saying, oh, wow, there's like a whole other world out there that actually speaks to my taste and what I like. And that kind of got me interested. And then when I went to university, college, I didn't even know that film was I was pretty ignorant of like a thing that you could do. It didn't seem like a possible, you know, option for me. But then I just started watching more films and taking film classes and took like film history and theory and Italian film and just fell in love with it and just said, I want to be involved in this. I don't know in what capacity, but I just want to be a part of it. Because I never really had direction. I was a pretty good student, but I just didn't really have a direction of what. I wasn't one of those kids who was like 16. I was like, I want to be a doctor. Like, I never really understood that. People that knew so much at a young age about what they wanted to be. But I just kind of fell into it, fell in love with watching films and making them and just knew I wanted in. And then got out of college and moved to New York, and there was just like no work really. So I did a little bit of PA work, a little art department, which I was terrible at. I had my first job was for a Nickelodeon, which was like a kids programming thing. Somebody knew somebody that got me a job in the art department. We had to paint it was a set. It was this whole kind of pirate thing. And I remember I had to paint like an arrow, like red arrows. And I kind of got to the end and stepped back to admire my work and kicked the bucket over and just covered everything in red paint. Kind of realized this is probably not the field for me. And then New York was just kind of dead. So I was like, let's move to LA. I wanted to get out of New York anyway. New York in the 80s, 90s was like dirty, harsh, rough. And I had dreams of like palm trees, you know, and beautiful beaches and making films. So I moved to LA and then just sort of hustled and struggled, you know. But I knew how to edit because in college, right after college, there was a guy in my school who worked in the equipment lab. Like, you know, you take a camera out, you know, back then it was film cameras. It was all like 16 millimeter, like bullets that we take out. And when I was about to graduate, he said, well, what are you doing now? And I go, I don't know. Do you have a job for me? And he was like, yeah, I have a job for you. I mean, I can't pay you, but I have an apartment in downtown Poughkeepsie, New York, which was a pretty rough area at the time. And he would go around and do these like news stories. If somebody said, you know, there's a cat like in a tree on whatever, on Pecan Street, go over there, get us footage. He would go with a camera. And I was his boom guy. And I would cut for him. And I learned how to edit that way. So I had that skill set and moved to LA and just kind of hustled. And because I knew how to edit, I was able to get my foot through the door.
Wicked. Was that like, did you ever do music videos at that time? I feel like music videos in that like kind of early 90s was...
The big thing early 90s was doing like people, it was all spec stuff, but people would do karaoke like videos, you know, where basically it was like the background for karaoke, and it was just like fall in the park with like trees and the lake. It was just like sort of like a montage of nature or all these sort of silly kind of things that they somehow managed to sell. I did a couple of public service announcements because we just started having cable TV in America, in New York. It was the beginning of cable TV. And when they made that deal, the companies had to create a public channel where people could, like a guy would have a piano show or like talk shows, a really, really interesting era of like really made at home, weird show. There was some like soft pornography stuff. There was something very famous called the Robin Bird Show. And she was like an ex porn star, and she would just interview other porn stars, you know, and they would just dance in the middle, super low quality, very entertaining stuff that you can call into.
And was that's all like more videotape era, right? When like people was like
super fascinating, like huge videotapes, you know. And so but you could, they had to air public service announcements, you know, and it was part of their deal to get like for the whatever the company was, the cable company, to get the broadcast rights. They had to do to allow a couple of channels to do public service. So the only thing you get, there's no jobs as a director, so you can shoot these little public service announcements, you know, and give it to them. They'd air them at some point. So I did one like that. I directed one like that, which was like a anti-drug thing, which was crazy because I think like everybody was just completely high shooting it, you know. But it was like an anti-crack. It was like, you know, late 80s. But I remember I had a little concept, you know, and it was a lot harder back then because, you know, we shot on film. And so you needed like a place to process, you needed doing sound. It's not like today where, you know, you're on iMovie or whatever. It's so easy to do. It was a little bit more difficult. You had to get a deep team together. You had to like borrow and beg and just get people to do stuff for free because there's no money for it. But I remember it had like the whole concept was sort of like, you know, that song Ring Around the Rosie? It's like a children's song we have, at least in America. So yeah. It was a bunch of kids singing that song, and there was a globe spinning around, which was just an inflatable little ball, beach ball. There was a globe, and it just goes around through this playground, and then it hits like a bunch of crack vials and syringes, and it blows up. That was the idea. But I was like, okay, you know. And I was like, well, where do I get crack vials? Like, where the hell am I going to get crack vials? You know? And so I just went to like a park here in New York in Hell's Kitchen, and they were just like all over the place.
Yeah, sweet.
And I just took a bag and just like filled it with crack vials. So I did that, but then that didn't really go too far. You know, that didn't really get me the big directing gigs I thought it would get me. And so I moved to LA, you know, and hustled over there for a while. And basically I didn't start music videos. I got a job at a trailer company. I did movie trailers, and it was hell.
Oh, really? I'm like, oh, that sounds great.
Like, oh my God, it was just hellish. It was just, we edited on tape back then on three-quarter inch tape. And I was like a intern, but we work around the clock, and the people that ran the company, like the producers, thought that they were the directors of the film. They felt like they're the real artists. The films are just like a product for them to use. And
so you get sent clips. So you're getting sent like certain scenes and clips from the.
We would get sent a rough cut of the film. And then we would have to cut a trailer. And the schedules were always just like, you know, cut a trailer. It's a hard thing to do a trailer. I've tried to do them for films I've worked on. It's a completely different mindset. It's a really, really difficult thing to take a 2-hour film and figure out how to tell the story. Now, back then, that company specifically worked for Disney, and they had a book, like a menu, like in a world of, you know, of whatever, of insanity. One man came, and you had to like, literally, it was like a menu. It was like, you know, it was, you had to like pick one of these sort of formats and do it that way. That was their format and how they did it, you know. And we would work around the clock, and the guy that I worked for was just like horrible, you know. He was just like, I think he was 30 and drove like a Jaguar. He would say things like, he would abuse you, and then he would say things like, I'm gonna make you so rich you won't even know who your friends are, like just shit like that. Like that was supposed to be enticing, like a cliche of a sort of Hollywood shit. And I remember I fucking hated it. Some of the editors were like, okay, they're you know, I wasn't an editor yet, but the guys that ran it were just like horrible people. And I remember just thinking to myself, how long do I have to work until I get health coverage so I can get like I can get into therapy to deal with this thing, you know? Because you know, I try to hold on, and finally, like I quit. And then they hired me back again. The guy was just sort of like, you know, I'll make you so rich you won't even come on. I did another week, and then we just got into another fight, and I got out of there. I just couldn't deal with it.
Yeah,
it was just horrible, really, really horrible.
What for you was like the kind of breakthrough then? What was like a breakthrough moment where you were like, okay, editing's the thing? Was there a particular job you did? What kind of took you to the next level?
Yeah, I what happened was I got out of that and then kind of did some production work actually here and there. And, you know, I was writing a lot. Like everybody at that time was like, I'm going to write a spec script for The Simpsons. You know, it was like the beginning of The Simpsons. That was, you were going to make it, you know? And so I did a bunch of writing too, because I was never like, I'm going to be an editor. I was just like, I want to be involved in film. I want to direct. I tried directing in New York. There was no like, you know, wanted director needed, no experience needed, you know, there just wasn't really a way to do it, you know? And so out of desperation, my mom told me, oh, you know, my friend's son is a big editor. You know, and your mom tells you that. I'm like, oh, no, no, thank you. And I hit a point where I really just had no work and I hit a dead end. And I was like, oh, okay, let me call the guy. And the guy was a legitimate, like, big time editor. He was Oliver Scone's editor. At the time, he was editing The Doors. And I met with him, and I, along the way, I met a lot of people, and they give you a lot of bullshit. You know, they just tell you things. It's sort of a town where people promise you a lot of things, you know? And so I met this guy. I remember waiting in this sort of waiting area of a post facility, and like, I think Randy Quaid was sitting there, and I was like, oh my God, I've made the big leagues, you know, a celebrity. And then I met the guy, his name was Joe Hutching, great editor, like, I don't know. I think he's got 4 Oscars. He cut like JFK, The Doors, you know. What else has he cut? A lot of amazing, a lot of the really, really good Oliver Stone stuff. And I met with him, and again, out of desperation, it was like a mom connection. And he basically was just like straight with me. He just said, this is what you got to do. If you want to make it, get yourself a reliable car and a cheap apartment, because you're going to be running errands for the next 2-3 years of your life. But at least it was like a very, very like direct path. It was an honest path. It was just like, this is what you got to do. You got to hustle. You got to be a PA, whatever. Don't, you know, it wasn't like, you know, you're going to go to the top and all the kind of bullshit that I was hearing. And I said, okay. And it's kind of what I did. I mean, the car wasn't that reliable, but good enough. And then he called me 5 months later and it was like, we need an intern on JFK, the movie JFK. So I interned on JFK.
Wow.
And started making my way. That was the first sort of break to get in.
And how old were you then, sir?
I think I was like 25.
Yeah, yeah.
24. I mean, I spent 4 years just hustling, you know, doing all these kind of things. And I think it was 25. And then just worked as an intern there and worked my way up through that system. Yeah, JFK was a huge film, huge editing room. They don't have those anymore. We had like 20 people working because it was film and video and Super 8 and archival and visual effects department and 3 editors, 3 huge, who became, I mean, huge editors. It was Joe Hutching, who's like a really like a huge guy. Hank Corwin, who was a guy who came from the commercial. You guys may know him from the commercial world. He was like a very renowned, like kind of, I think he did like Nike Revolution and all that kind of stuff. And he was from a completely different world than the feature people. And a young editor, which is Pietro Scalia, who became like Ridley Scott's. He's done probably 10 Ridley Scott films. So, but it was like a intense sort of editing room. And Oliver is an intense person. It was just like, you know, trial by fire for sure. You know, people today are like, oh, you know, my boss is abusive or whatever. I'm working in a toxic environment. I'm like, oh. You don't know anything. Oh, that just sounds lovely what you're going through right now. You know, this is really a different time. It was lawless. You know, it was just, you know, the director was like king, dictator. You know, it was completely different. It definitely made you tough, you know, and resilient. But I did that. But what happened was like back in those days, the path to editing, it may never happen. Like, there was an actual profession, which was assistant editing. They had internship programs where they teach you, and you go through that and you become an assistant, a third, a second, a first. You make first for 10 years. And if you're lucky in your 50s, maybe you'd be like, okay, now you get to edit. You know, I mean, it was a really strict, it had a very kind of military kind of approach. I think. But you still have in production, like camera departments, you know, like you do it this way and you do it that way. And so, you know, you hang the film, the second perf on the left, you know, there's a lot of medial, only my first coffee, but just a lot of just like structural kind of work that you had to do in a certain way before you can get to do the next thing.
Yeah.
So you don't get to fire the gun until you clean it and take it apart for 2 years, you know, and a real feeling of that. Which in a way, you know, it was hard to get ahead, but in a way you felt like you're a part of a system that was a roadmap to get to doing this thing. That all fell apart once digital editing happened and editing rooms became like, you know, now it's like, I just cut my last film, was just me and an assistant. That's it. You know, because you can just do so much right now by yourself. You don't really need anybody. Technology changed so much. But basically, I did that for a while. I assisted for a while, like on 3 or 4 Oliver Stone films and then a couple other films. And I was just like, I hate this. I'm a bad assistant. I'm not an organized person. My brain, like being an assistant and being an editor are two completely different things. You know, they don't really, you're not really learning. You're learning how to assist. You're not learning how to edit.
I was going to say, because it's so interesting, because editing is so creative. I always see it as being... you're the director's like right hand. I see it's like a second director. It kind of like you direct and then you bring on an editor. Like I wanted to be an editor. Well, I still edit loads of things as well. Yes. But I just saw it as being part and parcel as being a director. You're a creative. And it's part of the filmmaking.
Ooh.
All that kind of like stuff that you're learning about organizing bins and all this sort of stuff. And like you're saying, you're like, it's great to know all the cogs of it.
Ooh.
But then you're taken away from, you know, yeah, the side of it.
Yeah, well, it is that saying though, isn't it? You know, you kind of you direct your first story on set and then you've got your second director in the editing room, you know, so it's a storytelling, it's the same tool but in a different environment, isn't it? So what is your process, Sarah, in terms of like, I mean, in terms of your breadth of films, we're talking, you've worked with some huge directors and every film that you've worked on kind of embodies a very different style. There's no, I was just looking through your like your library of films that you've worked on, and I just can't help but just try and understand what it's like to work with the kind of like such different directors. And as an editor and as a storyteller like you are, how do you kind of, what's your creative process in kind of like collaborating and changing shape to kind of fulfill the director's vision of a film? How does that work?
Well, it's a very, every film is a different experience. Every film is a sort of gauging out or learning about each other. You don't know what the director wants, you know, or how they function, you know, and it's been different with different directors, you know. I mean, they're all so different, and it's not an easy process because, you know, people, there's huge egos involved, theirs, your own. A lot of sensitive people, you know, I think that you have to be very, you know, you have to be sensitive to be an artist, you know, and so yet there's a lot of pressure. So it's really just kind of learning how to communicate. And I think my own approach evolved. I think when I was younger, it was just like, this is it. And I know it. And if you don't agree with me, fuck you, you're wrong. You know, and there's a lot more of just like this very, and for some reason, because I didn't have a lot of experience, it's maybe that's just a factor of youth. I had a lot of conviction that this is the only way. And as I've kind of gotten older and evolved, I realized there really isn't there's multiple right ways, good ways, and many, many bad ways, you know, but there isn't just, it's not meant to be anything. Do you know what I mean? It can move in different ways and you need to be loose about it. And I've learned, I think, more about, I've learned to separate my own ego from the process itself. You know, like, what does the film want? What does the director want? You know, as opposed to what do I want or what's important for me? Of course, you have to have, I think it's really important to have convictions, you know, and know what you want, but a certain place you gotta like, I definitely come into the whole thing with like, what's the director's vision and how can I interpret that in my own way? But I'm serving their vision, you know, and sometimes you get a lot of liberty. You work with people that just, they're happy with it. Like when I worked with Doug Liman on Born Identity, I just got to do whatever I wanted to do. You know, when I work with Terrence Malick, it's a different story. He comes in with a lot of like, I wouldn't call it dogma, but he's got a vision of everything, you know. Again, Terry Malick is never sitting with you and kind of going, you know, start over here and go over there. It's just more a philosophical approach about what the film is about, you know. And so things have changed. And then even process-wise, I just did a Gus Van Sant film, you know, we talked about it. We're like, I was like, how do you like to work? He's a very kind of flexible human being. He's not like a film. If you look at his films, I mean, he's done Good Will Hunting and he's done like Elephant, you know, and he's done To Die For. It's just kind of all over the place. He's a bit of a chameleon. And we started talking about that and he was in about the process. So I had to talk about it. And to me, like the process is different for every film. I don't really know how I'm going to approach it. You know, I think also after you've done something for a long time, you don't really have to think about it. It's sort of like you're skiing. You just kind of, the terrain changes and you kind of know how to adjust and I don't have to consciously think about it. But so much of it depends on how it's being shot and directed. And even the process of how am I going to view dailies? How am I going to like, I worked with editors in the past and they watch all the dailies and they do notes and they do that. And they don't do selects or they do selects or they do locators to find the good moments. I don't work that way. I just start watching the footage. And then day one or day two or day three, I start to somehow understand the DNA of the thing. And what I want, you know, I'm learning like what the intention of the director is. And it's kind of interesting because a lot of times you kind of learn more through watching dailies than you learn by speaking to a director. Because, you know, a lot of times we're talking about stuff and there's a lot of ideas floating around. And, you know, I can learn a lot more about the way that it was shot, the way that it's blocked, the way that the, you know, and then I start to think about, well, what's the best way for me to work on it? Like sometimes I'll work in very, very strange ways, you know. I probably shouldn't say this on a podcast, but sometimes I'll start editing before I watch all the dailies because I'll watch a performance and I go, wow, this thing over here is sort of the truth. Like there's something very, for me, it's always about truth, whether it's a horror film, I haven't done a horror film really, action film, drama, comedy. There's an essential truth and the truth is unique to filmmaking, you know, because it's not a dialogue. It's the intersection of maybe dialogue with like light falling in a certain way and movement. It's like this sort of three-dimensional thing that is inexplicable, you know? And that's why I'm not that I am worried about AI, but we can get back, we get into that. But it's not anything you can describe in words, you know, but you can feel it I'm sure you guys feel as directors when you're like, okay, there's something unique here. And when I find that unique thing, I kind of put it aside for a while. I play with it in a rough way. And then I keep watching dailies, you know?
Yeah. And it does come to life differently as well. Like when you see rushes, it does come to life a little bit differently. On set, you could shoot something and be like, yeah, that's the one. And then, I don't know, you look back at something and go, well, I'm looking at this in a completely different way.
Yeah.
Like it's such a separation. Do you purposely separate yourself from production at all?
I love production. I love showing up on set. I know a lot of editors that hate it. And it doesn't affect me in a negative way because I'm not there all the time. I mean, there's always that thing about directors falling in love with a shot because they spend 20 hours setting it up and then you just take whatever. Like when they whipped at the end, you know, after they... And you go, that's all we need, you know.
Actually, when you drop the camera, actually, yeah. Does that bit when you drop the camera, I really like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've done that a lot. I've done that on a lot of films, you know, and mostly directors loved it. You know, I think it doesn't affect me. I like the process because I also directed a film and I've always been involved. I've had editor friends who are like, I don't want to go to set. It's scary. It's horrible. There's a lot of shit that can go wrong. You can knock into things, you know, you can piss people off. And trust me, I've done that as well on set, you know, but... like drank a prop and I won't even get into it, but Almost Famous, I think, like just open a can of something. It's like, oh, that's a prop from like, you know, that's supposed to be 19, whatever, 70, I forget what year that was. But anyway, I like it. I like being on set. I like seeing the process, you know, I also do a thing. A lot of times, because at work, a lot of times is remote now. You don't get to be on location. You know, there's a lot of stuff. You know, I did a TV show that was in the UK, and I was in LA. You know, for most of it, didn't really get to communicate with the director a lot. This was like I did some Masters of the Air, which was that World War II drama, and I would learn a lot by just at the end of takes listen, because I didn't have access to it was Cary Fukunaga, to the director. By listening to him at the end of takes, talking to actors, you know, because they're mic'd, and sometimes he'd come in and be like, well, what, blah, 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 blah. But, and he also does a lot, he does like 12, 14 takes. He's one of those, you know. Or watching the dailies and going, like, because a lot of them were like long steady cam shots, and they can feel like they're the same, but seeing what he's changing. Like and starting to analyze the footage and going, okay, that's kind of what he's going for. That's why he keeps like doing this over and over and over again. That background action, he doesn't like the timing of it. Whatever the hell it is, you know, it's different on different things, you know. But generally, I approach a project each one differently. Like on that one, he's a very precise filmmaker, and it's very interesting to him to have like background action and movement. So you kind of learn that. You kind of learn as you go along. And then the second stage is working with the director once they're back, you know.
It's interesting you talk about the edit process, actually, because I've been chewing Ozzy's ear off recently, because I've been I've just made a new short film, and I'm also cutting it. And it's been a real process, actually, because on the one hand, you've got your script and you've got the way you've shot it and you've got your story. And then on the other hand, you get your rushes back. And within these rushes, you found all these magic moments on set that then potentially lead the script in a slight different direction in the editing room. If, you know, if you want to take it that way, and if you're someone like me, you'll explore that and take it that way just to see what it feels like. And it's, I think I'm quite similar to you, where sometimes I get a bit hasty as well. And I'm like, ooh, this, when you spoke about truth and honesty just then, some clips just like, wow, when you watch them, you're like, wow, that's a moment right there. So let me just put a beat on that and just hold that there for a second. And weirdly, when I've been cutting this, what you were saying earlier is kind of like letting go of your ego, which is a really helpful thing, because I think when you're so close to a film, if you've directed it as well, you can feel like you know all the answers. And that can really restrict you from actually finding the better cut within a film.
I used to get very sensitive. People would say things, I just get really like, even when I was already like at a pretty high level, I would just get very upset about it, you know? And the best piece of advice anybody gave me about that was I was working with Doug Liman, who I did The Bourne Identity and a bunch of other movies with. And we had a screening of the film, and he gave like a bunch of notes that were just like, take this shot out and take that. And this is what you should do to make it better. And then I got really upset, and me and Doug was like, look, you know, whenever you get notes on these things, like what you have to recognize is that they're reacting to something that's not working for them. And that's what you got to get from that. We're not going to take his ideas and do them, but why is he saying that? You know, he's saying that probably because it's too long, or there's not enough tension, or he's not relating to the character. So now I kind of like consciously try, as I'm getting angry, you know, I try to go, wait, what is the problem? What are they reacting to? It's interesting, like some of the I made a film and I put it out in front of people, and it was, you know, you got to get it. You have to get it out of your head and out of your close circle of people to see what the true reaction is. You know, it was really, really difficult to do. And but I've been to a lot of screenings, like rough cut screenings of directors, you know, show to get comments. And you know, David Gordon Green, that director, he did like Pineapple Express.
Oh, yeah.
And he's done like everything from like super art house films to like huge comedies. And he just did a film called Nutcrackers. And he screened a rough cut of his film. And he was kind of fearless and amazing. He basically said, like, I don't need to know that the film is good. You know, just tell me what's not working for you. Just don't can decode it. Because the only way you're going to help me is by telling me what's not working. And I was like, that is so fucking brave and so fucking smart, you know, to look at that thing as a way to make your baby, your product, whatever, a little bit better, rather than to feed your ego and make you feel better about what you have. You know, and that was a real lesson watching him do that. I don't think I could ever do that. I don't think I could ever make a film and do something or edit something and be like, oh, just don't tell me what's good. Just tell me what's bad, you know, but there's something so confident and efficient about that, you know, so.
I think this specific one, though, has been a real learning curve. And everything that you've just been talking about right now confirms it, I think, in terms of like edit feedback, because it's important and it can be quite damaging, I think. And when you've got your first cut, just like you're saying, and I imagine all these directors who are going in with a rough cut and showing the film looking for feedback, fucking hell, I'm choking up looking at... I've showed a few of my mates, and if their faces don't do what I want...
It's looking at our faces, not the screen.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And this is another thing. It's like, I want to be in the fucking room with you when you watch it, and I want to get your... I want to get an emotional reaction, and I want you to turn around to me, and whether you've digested the film or not, how are you feeling? How's that made you feel? Do you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
But you can also feel it in a room, can't you? You can feel that like emptiness of a scene with fresh eyes when you're watching it with someone who you respect, or even if you don't know. So it's, you've got to be quite brave with your work, haven't you? And I think you're right. It's about throwing your ego out of the door and just kind of being really vulnerable with what you've made.
Did you edit your feature, Sar? Did you edit?
Unfortunately, I did. Yeah. I mean, I, you know what I did? It was a really beautiful experience, because what happened was I had this guy, Hank Corwin, who basically donated. He has a post facility, a commercial post place in LA and New York. And he basically, we didn't have any money. So he's like, yeah, we'll just edit here. So I had an editing room, and then he edited a little bit, and then I came in. It was a little bit hard for me to work with another editor, because it's so hard to talk about things when you can just do them. But he worked, and then I worked, and then a bunch of people that work that are commercial editors, that really wanted to do features or that were working at Lost Planet, they would come in and help out. And that was really, really beautiful. And it taught me a lot about directing and about editing. Like being on the other side of it, because, you know, it's a really interesting thing. Because first of all, like, they were pretty green and pretty young and talented. But I think when you worked for a while and you have a lot of experience, like if somebody tells you to do something, you're like, yeah, it's not going to work out. You know, you can kind of do it in your head. And like when you're younger, you're like, oh yeah. You know, like I just remember when I was young, when I worked on Thin Red Line for Malick, like, you know, he would tell me to do, I remember he told me to do one thing once, and I was like, that's not going to work out. And he just sort of, okay, bye. And he left the room. He also doesn't speak like in specifics. He recites a poem, you know, and he's like, oh, you just floated up the river, and then, you know, your branch, and, you know, you go to a tributary and slows down. Like, he'll do that. Like, he'll speak in very poetic. So like, you're like, oh, that's beautiful. And then when he leaves, you're like, wait, what am I supposed to do? You know, like, how am I going to do that? And so I remember, gave me this direction. I'm going to go off on a real tangent here, but he gave me that thing. And I was very young. It was like one of my first films. And then I spent the whole weekend just trying to crack, breaking my head. I was like, he told me things are like, don't really work. Like, they're like, he gave me opposing directions about what to do. It's like fast, but it's slow, but it's liquid. But, you know, so I spent a whole weekend just working. On Monday, he came in, like Sunday, like, I don't know, late. I was like, oh my God, he was right. He's right. It's amazing. It's working. I like, the impossible has become possible. This thing is beautiful, you know? And he came Monday morning, and I said, let me show you the cut. And I showed it to him, and he looked and he said, yeah, you're right. It doesn't work. So, you know, but to get back to it, the point of the whole thing, it was really nice to work with other people other than myself, who I can throw an idea at, a concept at, and they were just eager to do it. And they'll try it. And you know what? 9 out of 10 times it failed. But they went with it, like, wholeheartedly, which I loved. And the other interesting thing that I learned about is, I remember I was talking to one of the editors, and I had a scene for him. And I was like, look, this guy is just trying to get money from this guy. But the real scene is about, he wants his acceptance about whatever. It's about his mother, whatever the hell it was. I gave him the sub, what I... Really, that's kind of, you know, when I edit a scene, a lot of times I think that way too. Like, what is this scene really about? You know, I think like Coppola talks about that. Godfather, what is it about? Family, You know what I mean? Like find, distill it to, and that's a good thing that we learned from commercials, by the way, about just how to like distill things, you know, what is it about? So I'm kind of like, this is not really about him doing that. It's about his relationship with his father. And you know, the editor was kind of like, yeah, but arguing with me, but it's about that, but he's got to get the money. And I'm like, no, just trust me. It's about that. Right. And he cut the scene, and then, you know, we had it in the cut, and I was working with a couple of editors, and then, you know, maybe 5 days later, and he really fought me on it, but he did it. And around 5 days later, we're watching the cut, and I go, yeah, that scene doesn't really work, and we need to change that scene to whatever. And he said to me, no, but it's got to be like that, because he is trying to, whatever, repair his relationship with his father. And I realized that I implanted that idea in his head. And I left that idea behind, but he had to adopt that idea to move on. Like at a certain point, when you work with a director or in any creative process, and there is a hierarchy, right? The director may tell you something and you don't agree with it, but at a certain point, you got to go with it. And when you go with it, you accept it and you adopt it, you know? And it was an interesting lesson to learn about myself as an editor, like the process of what you're doing. Like it's like a Stockholm syndrome situation, you know? So I did have other people edit it, and it was great doing that. But at the end of the day, I kind of like, honestly, I kind of, if I get to make another one, I want somebody else editing it for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I think it's important to just, like you said, like I'm also leaning on a lot of the skill set that I have rather than letting it just be wilder and chaotic, you know? And I think the thing that sucks about filmmaking is that you get to make your first film when you have no experience and no money. And if that doesn't work out, you probably don't get to make a second film. And I was thinking, like, the really, really experienced ones, like Scorsese, he should make a film for $1 million because he's got all the skill set and the knowledge and the experience, you know. But when you're young or starting out, you don't have any experience and all the limitations are on you. So it's such a miracle for you to actually make a good film, or at least make a one that allows you to make a second one.
Yeah, we were just talking today, actually having a coffee this morning, just reflecting on how really tough this industry is, you know, and the more I get into it, the more stories I hear. We're also just, I think me, Ozzy, and a lot of our friends at the minute are also listening to a podcast called
What Went Wrong. It's a really good podcast.
What Went Wrong? Okay.
Yeah. And they just dissect different films, and they've done a lot of research about them, and and it's just about what went really wrong with the films and how they got them made. And you know, you're just like, oh my God. Yeah. If anyone listening to us is not in the film industry, it's like, why? How are these people still doing this?
Yeah, it's so funny. You have to be extremely passionate, don't you?
Yeah.
But it's I just think it's just, for me, it's, what else do you think about apart from filmmaking and thinking about different stuff? Do you know what I mean? I always think when people go, oh God, I need to be motivated to do that or whatever, I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, it gets excited me. I'm like, if I've got an opportunity and an idea and a seat to sit down,
yeah,
and sit down and write it. But I don't know. It's just like, yeah.
Yeah, it's a rough one. Yeah, there's this great documentary called Seduced and Abandoned. Have you ever seen that?
Nah.
It's his name is a director from New York. I think he got canceled but a while ago already, like a big cancellation. He made a film called Black and White, and he was kind of a well-known New York writer. But anyway, let's forget about that part. But he made a film with Alec Baldwin, and it's called Seduced and Abandoned. It's really about the film industry, about the love, the passion that we have, and the abuse that kind of comes with it. And they basically make a fictitious film. They take an idea, and like Alec Baldwin's going to start with this film with some other actress, and it's like a crazy story. It's just like a love story between like a... They find some sort of ridiculous story like that clearly is going to be difficult to make at that era, doing that area. And they go to Cannes, they go to all the markets, and they meet with people, and they show you the process of what it's like to raise money for a film. And it's unbelievable. To make an independent film, so you don't have money, so you got to just convince, like, you know, oligarchs and... you know, people that have money and they want like.
So as I said to you, Greg, we just need to meet some rich people.
Shall I tell you what I realized the other day, though? And this is crazy. And I actually told you this, Ozzy, but the other day I realized who it was that told me. So I went to Cannes a few years ago and I was talking to this female director. And she was like, oh, do you have any, are you represented by any for film and TV? And I went, I'm not actually, I'm actually looking for that at the minute. And she was like, she goes, oh, what are you working on? And I was like, well, I'm just trying to get this script in front of people that I've wrote. And she goes, well, you know who's going to help you make your first film, don't you? And I was like, who? She went, fucking no one. She's like, no.
That's good advice.
You're like, who? Tell me.
Should I tell you who he was?
Oh yeah, you know.
Sure.
Fucking Lynn Ramsey.
Lynn Ramsey. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know until like 3 weeks ago.
That's the best piece of advice. You know, that's the same advice as that I got. Like get a cheap apartment and a reliable car because you're gonna be hustling for 10 years if you're lucky. I mean, I think that's the kind of advice that sort of goes, oh, okay, do I really want to do this? You know what I mean? Because, yeah, I think it's great advice, you know? So, fucking no one.
How
did you then, sir, like, did you fall into commercial filmmaking because the directors you were working with were doing commercials? Like, how did it work? How did that work?
No, you know what happened was is I edited a film with, like, the first film that my first credit was on a film called U-Turn for Oliver Stone. And I was co-editing with this guy, Hank, who came from commercials, was like a big, big name from commercials. And he actually initially had a really hard time breaking into features because back in that day, it was like, oh, commercials, you know, and TV, like, it used to be, I think, commercials, TV, and film, you know. And now it's probably TV commercials film. Yeah, I don't know, but like it was like, oh no, we don't want a TV, we don't want a commercial person, you know. But anyway, so I worked with him and we really kind of hit it off. And then he just kept and we wanted to work together, and we knew that the chances of both of us getting hired as two editors on a film is not gonna happen. He was like, just come work, you know. Come work at my company, that way we can work together, you know. And so he brought me in. And I think, and at that point, I already had like, you know, I think I already had like an Academy nomination. I was, you know, I had a career going, and in the commercial world, he brought me in. They were like, yeah, but yeah, we know he did like Thin Red Line, but can he do like a 30-second? You know, there's a lot of doubt about
mayonnaise commercial.
Can he do Cars? I did the Bourne Identity. They're like, does he understand Cars? You know, there was a lot of that. I mean, I had DP friends, they're incredible DPs, and they're like, yeah. I can't do a car commercial. I was like, what? You like, yeah, I haven't done Cars, so they won't hire me. I don't know if that's still the case with DPs, you know. I don't do metal, you know, reflective metal.
And directors as well. Like,
oh, yeah. You know, yeah. Right. So it's like, you don't do comedy, you know, whatever. And so, honestly, as a commercial editor, I don't get to do comedy, even though I love comedy. And, you know, I do like, I do big visual effect spots and big kind of bang, you know, globe, whatever the hell they are. And I'm like, oh, okay, sure, you know. I'm not really a visual effects person, but you know, I have a few of those in my reel, and that's sort of become the thing. I've never kind of leaned towards films that are huge visual effects, you know. I like practical stuff, but
I noticed that about your reel, about your commercial reel, it felt very different to your film reel.
Well, a lot of it has to do because, you know, I don't I think part of the problem that I have, let me answer your first question, which I don't even remember anymore, about, that doesn't matter. I think what happened with Hank, was that the first job, do you know this guy, Rolf Schmerberg? He was a huge director from Berlin, and we did a Hewlett-Packard job. This is like way back. Huge job, and they were like, yeah, we don't know. And Hank basically said, I vouch for this guy, and if he fucks it up, I'll recut everything that he does for free or whatever. I'll take care of everything that he did.
As a good friend.
Oh. And then we ended up going to Berlin on my first job and spending 2 weeks with this very, very eccentric, fun German. He was a huge director at the time. And basically, I think the second we landed, he bought a kindergarten and turned it into a production office. And we just landed jet lagged. He was just like, we must smoke hash. It was like 10 in the morning. We were like, oh my God, you know? And so, basically forced us to get high, like, at that time. But
hey, it's a process.
We're talking about the commercial thing is, I think because I do a lot of, like, I do features, you know, and commercials. And so when you go away in commercials for a year, it's like you were never there, you know, like, you, who are you, you know? And so, like, a year, it's like dog life in advertising, you know, yeah. Like, a year is 20 years. And so so the work that I get is mostly from directors that I know, and the directors that I know, I work a lot with Wally Pfister. And with Doug Liman, you know, and they, at least lately, you know, and so, and they, for some reason, do these kind of jobs, you know? So,
do you know, you were saying, like, feeling the process with a feature and stuff. Do you know, when you get commercials can be so heavily storyboarded as well. It does my head in how.
Yeah.
So do you, is your process in the commercial similar to your, when you're cutting a film, do you kind of feel it out? Do you look at the storyboards and kind of think of them, or do you kind of just, I don't know, feel it out?
So usually what I do is I kind of go, my responsibility is to take this thing and elevate it or make it the best that I can. So let me just do this. It's the same process I do. I go, let me just make this, let me just give it, like, a life, you know, beyond just we're selling a product or whatever the hell it is. And, you know, and again, a lot of times the mistakes that you make shooting are kind of interesting and they're kind of real. Mm. I do that, and I make it the best, and I present that. And sometimes in my back pocket, I go, I have the storyboarded version in case there's, like, a freak out. My approach is, it's a sandcastle. You build this beautiful thing and then it goes away. You know, it just, my job is to make it the best that I can initially, to be creative, to hopefully inspire. And I've had a lot of times where the agency were like, oh my God, this is fucking great. The reality of it is, a month later, the times that it stayed that way were very rare, right? But there were times where they're like, yeah, well, this is it. We're gonna sell this thing. And that was maybe years back. I think things have changed, you know? My job is to take whatever idea it is that I don't love and execute it in the most elegant way that I can.
Mm.
You know, that's all I can do. I just don't want to be the edits to look shitty and the sound to look bad and be like, oh, you, at the end of the day, it's my work. And I don't want to do something amateurish or ugly or, you know, brutish. So that's kind of what my approach to it. And my approach to it is kind of like, to me, it's a temporary. I kind of love it. I love the, listen, when you work on a film and some bad decisions are being made, that thing is just out there for life. And it keeps hurting you. You know, I mean, there's movies that I worked on that didn't go the way that I wanted to. And people will be like, oh, I really love that film. And I'm like, I can't help myself. Oh, no, it could have been so much better. I mean, fuck that. You know, like, a lot of times when I see commercials, like, you know, I don't watch a lot of network TV, you know, whatever. I do some, you know, but I mean, and so I'm not in the world. Like, I don't watch a lot of commercials. I probably should more, you know. Sometimes somebody's like, oh, that's amazing. I look at it. It's great. When I step by something and I see something that I've done, I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah. I kind of, like, remember it for the first time.
Yeah.
Because we go through so many versions that after a while you're like, oh, okay, you know, and I don't remember which one we had. And sometimes I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool, actually, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It happens. Yeah. It happens. And I'm like, oh, I like that. That's actually, or in my mind, I was like, oh, we really fucked that thing up. And then I look at it and I go, you know what? You know, with time, you know, when you're in a thing, a creative endeavor, sometimes somebody wants you to, like, you know, change, like, something. It feels very, very huge, but it was really, oh, yeah, so we used a medium instead of a close-up. All right. It wasn't the end of the world. Like, the thing, the whole thing is more than a couple of parts, you know? I mean, sometimes it's horrific, like, it's just completely rethought, you know, and we're like, and you're using material in a way that shouldn't have been used, and you feel bad for the DP. You feel bad for the creative. You feel bad for everybody, you know? But I like, what I love about advertising is there's a couple of things. The creative part I like about it is distilling language, which I think is useful in features. And sometimes it's just like, okay, how do I tell the story in the most simple way? I think it's actually quite useful for writing too, advertising, because it's a skill set. It's like really learning, like, 30 seconds, 15, 6 seconds, 15 seconds. It's like, how do I tell that? And you can, you know? And so it's kind of a useful thing. I like that part about it. And I also like the part about it that if it's not going well, it's over pretty quickly. You know what I mean? like I always say to myself, even if like you don't get along with people, you know, and again, mostly I have, but it's like, you know, you can endure 2-3 weeks of anything basically, but enduring a year, you know, of sitting next to somebody you don't like, is really fucking hard, you know? And so, and like I said, luckily I haven't had that yet. I don't do projects that way anymore. I seek out people that I like. You never know. And there's also like, there's a differentiation between difficult people because they care and they love, and difficult people that really just want to destroy your life. You know, there's a real distinction between the two. And I can make those, I can let a lot fly when somebody's passionate, you know, and like, this is what they're doing. They're neurotic, they're anxious, they're being irrational. They're saying things that are fucked up, whatever the hell it is, you know? And it's one thing when you look at the intention and kind of go, well, what's the intent? He, she wants it to be the best that it can. Maybe they care about it a little too much. Maybe they need to step back a little bit too. You do meet once in a while people are just horrible human beings, you know? Yeah. Huge egos and just, you know. And I like to collaborate. I'm not going to work with anybody who's not going to collaborate. I don't see my point in it. I've had meetings with directors and amazing directors, you know, that are like, I like to do this and I like to sit and I like to put that, blah, blah, and try everything. And I'm like, well, you got the wrong person, you know, no disrespect. I totally get it. You know, I mean, Kubrick did that. I mean, Hitchcock did that. He was just like, I heard like Kubrick would walk by a bunch of moviolas and grease pencil in, out. I like to collaborate. You know, when I directed, I was kind of like, I loved collaborating. You know, lots of friends who are DPs. I'm not going to like, I have a visual idea, but I'm not, you hire people that are better than you to express your vision, you know? And, you know, like when I did my movie, I have a costume designer. What do I know about costumes? I have an idea, but she really knew her shit. And she presented me with things with so much care. And I was like, well, I feel that. Or I'd be like, why? And what do you think? And it was such an amazing thing. In editing, you're an astronaut. You know, you got everything in your hands. You can do everything. You control every DB, your color. I mean, now with AI, you can control, you can create anything that you basically want to, but it's a solitary thing. And I think when you work, when you direct, you truly do rely on a lot of people. And it's a humbling experience and a beautiful thing. When you basically can't do anything, you know? A friend of mine explained to me when I was directing my film, I was like, well, what do I do? He goes, your only job is to explain what you want to other people to do it. You know, and because you assume that you wrote a script that people understand, they don't understand. That's in your mind. You got to really be like, hey, you have stage direction. This is what I mean by that. This is what I want. And so, again, another huge tangent. But yeah, I want to work with people that collaborate. I love it. And I've worked with somebody. I worked with Gus Van Sant. I just finished a film with Gus Van Sant. Collaboration is so beautiful. It's amazing. You know, he's just like a jazz musician. It's just sort of like, do this, you know, do that, let's do it, you know, you're playing. I like, yeah, to do that. Now later in my career, I just kind of like, I like that part. I don't want to be tortured. I want to have fun. I want to be creative. I want to make something great and be happy about it. And it's still gonna be fucking hard.
Yeah, it comes from like mutual respect. They obviously like respect you. It's just like a mutual respect for each other's talents.
Yeah, and there's just some people don't want to collaborate, and it's fine, you know. So to go if you have the ability to pick and choose a little bit, go to the things where you can collaborate. You're talking about getting notes and stuff like that, but it's such a beautiful thing between an editor and director when you have a respect and you kind of know it, when you can just go, oh, that sucks, you know? Nobody's like, oh, no, I shot that. Or I cut that thing. You don't have to be like, it doesn't mean you're a piece of shit. You know, it just kind of means like, that's not good. Let's just make it better. Let's work about it. When you reach that level of cooperation, collaboration, I've done it with a few people. It's very hard to do with people you just met. That's the beauty of that. There's a thing about it, and which is beautiful. When I work with Doug Liman, there's no like, you know, you don't hold back. You don't kind of, because we know each other so well. You just, I know, like he's got incredible respect for me. Like he keeps hiring me, and he wants me on everything. Do you know what I mean? Like, and he knows I have respect for him, and I can say, some of it is a personality thing. Some people are sensitive and you just can't say anything. But with him, I'm like, that's fucking horrible. What'd you do that day? Like, you know, like we can joke about it. If you can joke about it and laugh about it, Malik is like that too.
people think he's a very serious guy. You can just joke about it. I mean, he'll joke. He'll tell me, well, like, you'll accuse me of not watching the dailies. Like, we'll just do, you can be playful about it, which is so great because we have such, it's such a unique industry. Like, you know, we're not in a real world. Despite all the bullshit we're talking about, how horrible it is. Like, when you're set, set is a little bit harder because there's a lot of pressure and there's money and time ticking. We live in a weird world that's just not governed by the rules of corporate America or businesses, you know. We're doing things that are just completely wrong a lot of the times, you know. It's great. And we're playing around with ideas and, you know, it's just... And even though the stakes are high, the stakes are kind of low. We're not like working in an ER room. You got to remember that sometimes, you know, I think we forget that a lot. Like, you're not, you know, we're not resuscitating people. And that's really important too. I'm bad at that too. Sometimes to learn like, okay, we're making entertainment. We're opening people's minds. It's very, very important, but you fuck up. I mean, you know, I mean, somebody may get fired, but you know, so yeah, that's about all I can say about that. Yeah.
It's true. I think also with, we've got like a close knit group of directors out there when we show where we're like, what the fuck were you thinking? Oh, we'll absolutely shred each other, but it comes from a place of love. Do you know what I mean? And it comes from a place of respect. But it is that thing of when you let new people into your vulnerable circle, what it is they have a perception of who they think you are. So, and when they realize that you're a fucking idiot, it's like,
yeah,
most of us are. Which most of us are. You know, it's, that's the vulnerable thing of like letting them in and going, no, what I'm going to, you know, you got to be really vulnerable with people. So it's always scary at the start, because what I was saying to Ozzy earlier in terms of presenting a film, it was like, I was watching something the other day and it was saying like, it is like a magic trick. You know, you are getting these people, whether it's a commercial or a film, to buy into your story, whether it's sci-fi, you know, horror or whatever. So whatever you present is a representation of, I guess, who you are and what you've made. But the process is a whole different story. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, I've just made an attempt at a first sci-fi. And the reality of it is that I shot it in a wood and I'm surrounded by dog walkers who are walking by going, oh, what are you doing there then? Do you know what I mean? So you've got these really hard, these kind of like, challenges that you're dealing with, and you've really got to contain, you've got to make sure this feels real for everyone that's in it.
Yeah.
So in order to do that, you've got to be extra vulnerable. You know, you've got to put yourself in that place with the actors. And I think when you're letting new people in, you've got to be bold and you've got to be vulnerable. Otherwise, you're just not going to get what you want out of it, are you? Really?
Yeah.
I love the idea of a sci-fi with a bunch of dog walkers walking in the shot.
Yeah.
I love it. I think it's great. I mean, maybe turn it into a comedy, you know? That's sort of the thing we're talking about. Like, you just don't know what's going to be the best, you know? Yeah. That's the beauty, I think, sometimes of like editing, where you're like, well, that doesn't work, you know? But this really works, you know? And to be, it's such a hard field, you know, because you're like, you have to come so prepared, you know? And it's really a bold thing to be like in the middle of shooting, you know, and it's a short, you don't have a lot of time to be like, wait, actually, this is a story. And it's very hard to do because right now, you know, you have a lot of scrutiny and a lot of people. I mean, think if you're like an auteur independent filmmaker with a lot of money, it doesn't have to be beholden to anybody. You can probably do that, you know. You can probably go, no, this story is actually about that dog walker, you know. And so, let's just go. Let's just go, you know, let's just go with that. But anyway,
yeah.
So you have, so, yeah.
I was going to say, do you ever look back on some of the films you've worked on and just like, oh God, I'd cook that so differently now. Has your taste changed when you rewatch, or do you rewatch many of the films?
Don't rewatch, you know, it's just like, by the time you finish a film, you watch it like so many times. The hardest part about being like an editor in a feature film is to stay like fresh. And to remember what you felt, because really it's about feeling. It's like performance, you know, like, oh, this is exciting. This is sad. You know, this is melancholic. And it's so hard to maintain that you almost have to make like a mental note of it. This is what I felt when this was like, because a lot of times, like, you'll go in
and there's something, and we're like, oh, let's just take that out. Let's tweak the timing a little bit. And it's such a game of frames, you know, like a little sound can, something can be funny with just like a different wind in the background, you know, or it's really fucking weird, you know? And so how sensitive these things are, you know, they really are. Like on one hand, I was saying you take one medium a close up, it is a big deal. Like it can kind of like change. And so by the time I'm done with it, I'm just like, I'm done. I have to say, and then once in a while, like I've not in a long time been like, well, Thin Red Line is playing in the theater. I'm going to go check it out. But I don't watch them. But a lot of times when I watch, I'll be on TV and I'll watch him. I actually like him more than I thought I would. Because I think there's a little bit of an exhausting experience of everything where there's always like, you know, for me, the film is never, talk about ego, is never exactly what I want it to be. I'm not the director. And a lot of times I would have done that differently. I would have mixed that differently. I would have done a different piece of music. I would have made that longer, shorter, whatever, you know, and usually it's longer these days because I think that like there's such a emphasis on like just make it short because people are on their iPhone, you know, like Jesus Christ, you know, just yeah. They can't. And so mostly it's just like, oh, I wish like we could linger more, whatever the hell it is, you know. And so in my mind, I'm like, I'm happy I did it, but it's always a little bit like, I wish it was a little bit different. And again, and then when I see it 10 years later, I see the Born Identity. I'm like, oh, this is good. Like I watched the Born Identity. That was the only thing I watched. Like last summer, it was an anniversary and I was here in New York somewhere. They screened it in like an auditorium. And then we did a Q&A, me and Doug Liman, the director. And so I hadn't watched it in a long time. And I watched it and I was like, fuck, you know, it's like, I don't know, 20 years old, you know? And I was like, still fucking good, you know? And so I was like, I was really happy because I thought it may be a little like some of the action was like, okay, it's not the greatest, you know, it's okay. But on the whole, I was like, oh, it's gritty. It feels real. It's tight as fucking hell, you know? And I was like, oh, it's a tight film. Like, things are moving along. Like you don't, you know? So, you know, it was my first action film really, you know? So, and a lot of it was just like, oh, this is what I feel like doing. You know, it was the kind of film where I got to do a lot of that. I got to just do what I wanted to do. It was the first film where I was like edited alone and kind of got to do what I wanted to do. Mm. And so I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, that's great. You know, would I cut the same again today? Probably not, you know, but yeah, I do enjoy, like I said, I haven't watched a lot of them, but when I do, I'm okay with them. Even with the ones that I think I fucked up, like, you know, some of them I just don't like at all. They didn't turn out the way I wanted them to turn out. You know, I'm just like, I struggled on them. I'm like, I just don't want to watch it. I don't want to go there. Let that be, you know, even though sometimes people are like, I really loved that film. And you're like, oh, you know, trigger is like, you go back there. You're like,
the memories are all streaming back to you.
A year of hell or 6 months of just, oh, unhappiness.
Emotional connections to you, haven't you? That's the thing.
Right.
I tell you what, we are actually we're winding down on the questions.
Let's do it. All right, perfect.
I tell you, that was such a pleasure to just kind of like dig deep and go through the trenches again with you and talk about old work and your process, like
big time.
But for me, I feel like related to and learned a lot through that conversation. And I think it just kind of solidifies things in my head that like, because we all go through a tough time with films, and I think. With you and your credibility, it's nice to hear that what we're going through, you also go through as well.
Just
you
know what I mean? Levels, isn't it?
Different levels, yeah.
Everybody goes, man. Yeah, huge directors go through that. Yeah.
Is there a couple of questions? What I kind of want to ask is like, maybe not your favorite film you worked, but the favorite process of the film you worked on, and then also a favorite film you didn't work on.
Oh, okay.
Where you like. Turn that down. I kind of wish I'd done that one.
Okay. Fun film to work on. I mean, Thin Red Line was kind of incredible to work on.
There seems a lot of layers with that one as well. Like that looked like there were about seven films in one anyway, and went in a different direction. Because didn't people turn up at the screen, at the like premiere, and be like, oh, I'm not even in it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that one, and I wasn't the only editor on it. There was Leslie Jones Leslie, yeah, and oh my God, I feel really horrible for forgetting, but I did. But there were multiple editors on it, but it was just a relationship with Malik. Was just such a deep relationship, and it was kind of like, especially after coming from like all the shit and the trailer companies and the horrible, like the motivations of people why they want to do stuff, it was like, this guy is like an artist, he's incredible. The personal relationship was kind of a beautiful thing. The interest and ideas, okay, lunch, a half hour, but we sit and we talk. And we talk about things, not about like, oh, this shot needs to be shorter. It's like big fucking ideas, you know, about life and an interest in humanity. And it was like a person that just opened my eyes and became an important person in my life on a personal level, you know? So that one, I think, was really informative and for me. Favorite, like Born Identity was really, really hard. It was like historically hard. I mean, people have done videos about it and told stories about how difficult and contentious it was. But it was an amazing experience going through that process, you know? It was like a fever dream, you know? But then lately, like this last one that I worked on was incredibly fun. Like this Gus Van Sant film, which is a smaller film. It was just such a fluid and just kind of like supportive experience, you know, where, you know, I think he's not like, his attitude is like of a veteran and of an artist. He's like, let's just look, make something interesting. There wasn't like, oh, it's got to like make box office or whatever. Just like, we're making a movie and we're playing. Or there's a playfulness that happened with that one that I really, really loved. And a lot of times for me, it's about the person that I'm working with, you know, that is such a major part of it, you know, like that. There's my interaction with the footage, my relationship, because you develop like a relationship with actors and stuff. It's, sometimes you meet an actor and you're like, hey, oh, and you realize, oh, I don't know them.
I just had that.
But you've just been staring at them for so long.
Yeah.
I just had that. That happened to me last year with Anne Hathaway. I did a film called Lockdown that we did during COVID.
So
I spent 3 months in COVID just looking at her. And Chiwetel, it was her and Chiwetel Ejiofor. And then last summer I went to like a gallery opening and I saw them and I was like, hey, and what the fuck? And then my friend was always like, oh, it's Sar. And then we hugged it out. It was like, you don't know each other, but like you have such a, that was a fun one too. And a lot of the times the experience is just about the people of my assistants who I'm working with, where I'm at, you know, so I don't know if there's like a specific one. I did one 2 years ago, the very small film with a French director named Jean Stéphane, which I just loved him as an artist. It's called, I think it ended up being called Asphalt City with Sean Penn and Ty Sheridan. Really small, really dark film, you know? Super verite about New York City, like EMT, like, you know, ambulance guys. Too harsh for most people, but he's such a bright, like so weird. Like the weird thing is a lot of the people who work in the dark subjects are actually quite fun, loving people. I have a feeling a lot of people, I haven't done a lot of comedies. If people do comedies, they're kind of uptight and, you know, difficult. You know, and that's the thing. Terrence Malick, fun. It's always death, you know, afterlife, Christianity, whatever, you know, he's not doing comedies, you know, but he really, really fun. So yeah, that's kind of my answer. I don't really have one specific one. I mean, ones that I wish I worked on. I mean, there were great films that I interviewed for and ended up not doing. But a lot of times it had to do with, I didn't think the director and me were a good fit. But they're fucking great films, and they shall rename. They should remain unnamed. But there have been 4 or 5 films that were spectacular films that ended up doing incredibly well. Where I was sort of like, yeah, you know, I don't think we're the right. A lot of it had to do with that collaboration thing I was telling you about.
Yeah.
Where I was like, I don't think it's going to be collaboration, or I knew about them and how they work, and I was like, well. And sometimes I told them, I was like, I don't think we're probably not. Well, I don't think where I fit. I'm like, this is who I am, you know? And sometimes they're like, okay, that's not for me. And sometimes, you know, it was just kind of more like, no,
we're not going to do it. So honestly, there haven't been that many where I'm like, I've enjoyed some of them, and you know, and a lot of them I said, oh, I don't think it's really going to come together. And then I saw them and I was like, yeah. And sometimes I go to myself, this is the ego, I go, yeah, I think I would have done a better job with that, you know?
I do that with commercial pictures I've lost. And then they come on TV and I'm like, yeah, I might have done a better job than that. Or when someone's done a cracking job, I'm like, fair play, mate.
Fair play.
Listen, I watch a lot of movies where I'm like, fuck, how did they even do that? There's a lot of films that I watch that I wasn't up for that I'm envious of. There's plenty of that stuff that I see. I go, I wish I was the editor for that director. I have that every day. I mean, every time I watch a film and I'm like, wow, what? And a combination of the work and the opportunity with the footage, you know, to do it. Like, you know, a lot of times it's just like, it could be a great film. It could be like a dialogue scene, which is two people, and it's fucking hard to do. Underappreciated, just a dialogue, three people in a room. But I don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it. It's not my world. I want like the toys. I want like the visual stuff. I want like, you know. You know, I'm a visual storyteller, and I don't necessarily want to just struggle on like performance and conversations, because that's the hard. And the other day, that's the hardest shit to do.
Yeah,
two people in the room talking, you know, with nothing to cut away to the fern. I mean, you have nothing to do except like, are we here or are we here? You know,
yeah,
that's fucking hard, and that's underappreciated. And then all the films that win awards, you're like, okay, yeah, that's great, you know, but. The ones that deserve it are the ones that, you know, you don't see the work, you don't see how hard it is. And, you know, so that's a whole other discussion for another time, though.
Yeah. Wow.
Love it.
Saz,
massive privilege. Honestly, a massive privilege to talk to you. I feel really, really, you know, surprising thing. Natalie just randomly got in touch and we were like, we can't turn down this opportunity to talk to you. So,
great, yes. That's good. And maybe I'll see you, you know, you do a commercial. Called Lost Planet.
Then are you based in New York?
I'm in LA in New York, but you know, I love going to Europe as well. So
sweet, yeah. Love it, mate. Yeah, big time.
Yeah. Right, I'm definitely going to be hitting you up. So yeah, look out for me.
Please do. All right, see you guys.
Nice one, man. Thanks so much, dude. Thanks. Speak to you soon.